You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back, Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor. Really pleased to have with me a good friend, Eric Coffin. Eric is the editor of the HRA, the Hard Rock Analyst. It's a family of publications. He's also a co-founder of the Metals Investor Forum, along with Scott Gibson. It's an excellent event they put on. There's one in Toronto coming up. Those of you who might be in the Toronto area or plan to be might want to consider going there. Go to the metalsinvestorforum.com. It's a free of charge event, but you do need to sign up, leave your email so that you have entrance to this event. It's in downtown Toronto. I forget the name of the hotel, but it's
the Delta Hotel.
Right, exactly. Well, thanks, Eric. Hi, thanks for joining me. Really glad you could be with me. I hear you're out there chasing the cows somewhere in Ontario.
Yeah, I'm out in the boonies, and it's just me and the heifers. That seems to be about it. I'm surprised they have electricity, much less cell towers, to be quite honest. But seems like they do.
Well, that's nice to get out and away from the city once in a while, I think, and out amongst the cows.
Yeah.
Well, I grew up amongst the cows, so I sort of miss that in a way. But anyway, here in New York City, and you're out there amongst the cows in Ontario. Well, I'm really glad you could be with us today. And just give us your idea. What are your thoughts now about the global economy? I mean, I'm an old guy. I've been around a long time, about probably 10 years or so longer than you. And I've seen a lot of cycles, but this one seems to be different than a lot of others in some ways. But I'd just like to hear what you have to think, what you have to say about what's your assessment of the global economy now.
I mean, one thing I've said in the publication for months now, and you and I both know that the four most dangerous words in economics are, this time it's different, but this time it actually is different. I'm not sure, you know, and it's not really a traditional cycle. Like, yes, we had this razor sharp, very deep recession in the midst of all the lockdowns, but it hasn't really evolved like a traditional cycle because everybody got all this cash showered on them. So right now you've got the situation where, you know, the combination of the excess cash, supply chain issues, you know, far and wide, you know, we're dealing with 7-8% inflation. And I'm finding it a bit odd, honestly, because I watch Wall Street, and Wall Street seems to be convinced that this time it isn't different, i.e. that the Fed will always bail them out, that, you know, the Greenspan puts turned into the Powell put, which I find strange because Powell himself, you know, Lael Brainard, the vice chair of the FOMC, most of the FOMC members I've heard talk in the last 2 months keep saying, like, there ain't no put, people. Like, we're worried about inflation. We're going to push rates until we see inflation getting down close to our 2% target. And if Wall Street gets whacked in the process, oh well. But for some reason, Wall Street simply doesn't believe it. Like, they don't believe it. It's really very odd, very, very strange. And I'm based on the assumption that I'm kind of taking Powell at his word. He keeps saying, like, I'm going to go past neutral, and neutral rates are sort of a guess, really, but somewhere between 2.5% and 3% is probably the neutral rate. So if he's going past that, that means he's going to, you know, 3, 3.5, 4. If they go that far, Wall Street's rolling over again for sure. Like, I'll be shocked if we don't see lower lows. I mean, yes, we've got a nice rally right now, but I think this rally peters out in the next few weeks, and before this is said and done, we probably see the S&P 10-20% lower than where it is right now. What I'm counting on is, well, two things. Short term, if you look back at 2008 and 2000, in both of those cases, you know, we had very deep market corrections, bear markets. The first thing that turned was gold. Gold turned, in 2008, gold turned about 6 months ahead of the S&P. I think it's about four, I guess. gold turned like in November and the S&P turned in like the end of March. And right. I got a feeling we're going to see something similar again this time. But what it's probably going to take maybe is the Fed getting to the point where they're saying, yeah, okay, we're getting close. When you see the Fed start talking about, yeah, we think the top is going to be X in terms of the interest rate cycle, that's when I think you're going to see gold move. And I don't, we're probably not that far off. I mean, I'm kind of hoping, but this might just be naive optimism. I'm kind of hoping that, you know, the 1785 low we saw, that maybe that's as bad as it gets. It may not do much anything for the next little while, but if it's anything like 2008 or 2001, when the rally starts, it's going to be a long one. So that's kind of my first stop. My second stop is I'm still quite comfortable with base metals. Like, yes, they're pro-cyclical. So, you know, if the economy goes in the tank, then yeah, copper probably gets knocked back 75 cents or a buck or something. But the long-term fundamentals of, you know, you name it, copper, nickel, aluminum, anything really, are so strong that I think this decade may be like the 70s where you see the Fed not quite kill inflation. It kind of keeps coming back and it keeps cycling rates up. And maybe we have these mini recessions that aren't individually that bad. But those of us that are really old, like you and me, Jay, we remember that the 70s were actually a pretty good time to be in both gold and commodities in general.
Exactly.
That was kind of a decade of commodities.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think the 2020s might be the same.
Well, it certainly seems like it. When you mentioned 2.5%, 3%, I guess you're talking Fed funds rate probably?
Yeah. I mean, that's apparently, I mean, the Fed's best guess at what the neutral, and the neutral, the Fed defines the neutral rate as the interest rate where it doesn't slow growth, but it kind of zeroes out, you know, unemployment. You don't see any inflationary pressure. I mean, obviously the Fed and everybody is shooting for a soft landing, but And I hope that's what we get, but I know that if you look at the long-term average for the Fed and other major central banks, their batting average when it comes to generating a soft landing is about 250, so one in four. The other three times they don't pull it off. So I think the rational assumption has to be that they're not going to pull it off, that it's going to be a recession, not a soft landing.
Yeah, I mean, some people are looking to Powell. In fact, I think Paul has referenced Paul Volcker. He wants to be the second coming of Paul Volcker in a way. But, you know, it seems to me that it's a lot different than it was in 1980 now as well, Eric, because, you know, our debt to GDP at that time was around 30%. Now it's over 100. It's 120 or 130%. And someone pointed out that if the government's borrowing cost rose to 4 or 4.5%, it would be 30%. The interest expense would be 30% of our budget. That's equal to our defense expenditure. That's equal to our Social Security expenditures. Yeah. And so there, I mean, it's just, you would think there would be some loss of confidence in the dollar in the system if we got to that point. And I just, and Doug Nolan, who I had on the show just recently, a couple of weeks ago, he is the portfolio manager for the McIlvany Management Tactical Short Fund. Doug says he really believes that Powell wants to, really has his heart set on and really wants to do the right thing and rein this thing, you know, and get it under control.
Yeah.
But Doug is just really thinks it's going to be almost impossible for him to do that. I hope he's wrong. Everybody has to hope he's wrong because Doug says, and I wrote what he said down here. He says, history suggests today festering issues in the credit derivatives and structured finance will prove woefully worse than anyone today appreciates. And there is little policymakers can do to remedy the situation. The cycle has changed. The amount of stimulus necessary to one more time resuscitate the bubble dynamics would risk hyperinflation. So Doug is worried that the problem that we have is that because it's, you know, every time we have to, the balance sheet just keeps getting exponentially larger every credit cycle. And so Doug is worried that this time it could get away in the opposite direction. I just hope that's, I mean, I remember how frightening it was in the 70s. I mean, I was a young man, and then I remember our first mortgage is a 17.5% mortgage. I remember how that was frightening. And so I just hope somehow that Powell can get his hands, his arms around this thing, get this thing under control, because it's very frightening.
But, you know, and you know, and I know that guys in our business, and especially hard money types, they like to dump on central bank governors.
Yeah.
And I personally, I'm glad I'm not in his shoes. He's in a really tough place because.
Oh my goodness! Yes.
You can't let inflation run because we all know that, you know, the average person on the street, they're not going to get wage increases that match inflation. We both know that's how the world works. And Powell certainly knows that. And he's been saying it for months. And he's going, look, if I don't do this, everybody's going to fall farther and farther behind. I think he's probably a little confused that there hasn't been any slowing yet. But I think we can thank a year and a half of pandemic stimulus for that. I think the average person just has a bigger cushion right now than they would normally have in a normal cycle. That's part of what makes it different. But even so, you're seeing the savings rate drop like a stone right now.
Right.
I don't know whether it's going to be 2 months or 4 months or 6 months, but I think we'll get to the point where consumers will hit the wall, and that's where he's going to have to be, you know, lucky, honestly. He'll have to just guess the right interest level, because otherwise he'll push it into recession. And the other thing, you and I have talked about this in the past, you know, I know the letters MMT are anathema to hard money types, and people are probably throwing their phone at the wall right now. But the truth of the matter is, I look at that, and there's a lot of things with MMT I don't like. It's a very kind of inherently left wing kind of thing. But the basic concept of the Feds, plural, just getting to the point of saying, you know what, screw this. Let's just have the Treasury print a bunch of stuff. The Fed will pay it off, swap one way, swap the other, and wipe a bunch of the debt out, monetize the debt, in other words. I still don't see a lot of other ways out of this, honestly. I mean, how else is this going to happen, really?
Yeah, yeah. I think Powell is really opposed to doing that. I think what Doug Nolan is saying, there's probably no other way out of it. Yeah.
Yeah, it is getting to the point where, realistically, there's no way you're going to get rid of the debt pile the size in pick any G7 country. It's the same in all of them. Politically, at a political level, it's not feasible. There's no way you could pass the spending cuts and tax increases that you would need to make that happen without being guaranteed of being out of office at the next election. So what politician's going to have the stones to do that? Let's be honest. Like, they're just not.
Well,
I don't think Powell's going to have much choice. I think he hates it.
Yeah.
I don't think he's got much choice.
Yeah, and unlike Paul Volcker, things were much different at that time. As I say, the debt was much less onerous. We still had a lot of exports. We hadn't really become, you know, totally a service economy yet at that stage like we are now. Anyway, with just limited time here, Eric, I want to get into some of your ideas. What companies are you taking to the Metals Investor Forum? I think you gave me some names. You mentioned copper a little while ago. I know Pan Global is one of them you mentioned, right?
Pan Global is one of them. I'm a big fan of that deal. It's got all the guys running it, very high-level guys out of RTZ and a few other places, and they really know the Iberian Pyrite Belt, which is where they are. They've already got a very good-looking discovery called Romana, but the reason why I think this is a good time for it, notwithstanding the, you know, potential copper issues 6 months down the road, they've just finished flying airborne on a much larger concessionary that they picked up a couple of months ago. That has 8 or 9 very large gravity anomalies. And in the Iberian Pyrite Belt, when you're looking for these massive sulfide deposits, you look for gravity anomalies. They've been doing much better quality ground gravity. And Tim tells me, I talked to him a couple of days ago, and he said, I have a lot more targets now, and the targets look a lot better. I think the odds of them making another 1 or 2 or 3 discoveries are actually very high. And he's just about to start really ramping the drilling up. So I think that's a great story. Another one I'm bringing is Orezone. I followed Orezone for years. The guy that runs it, Patty Downey, I mean, I love Pat. He's a brilliant guy, fantastic mind builder. You know, you always get nervous about guys going from being a developer to a producer, but Patrick has built 3 or 4 mines, very successful ones, and so far everything's right in line, under budget, ahead of schedule. Bombori should be pouring gold in about, hopefully, a couple of months, and by the time they finish ramping up, it'll be 200,000 ounce a year plus producer. They're adding a lot of ounces. I think it's going to make a ton of money, and frankly, once they're up to nameplate, I suspect they probably get bought out by somebody. Honestly, I think that's probably the end game for them. A third one is a company called Altalay Mining, A-T-L-Y. They've just started up their second mine. They've got a mine now called Campo Morado, which basically these are both kind of VMS mines. Campo Morado is mainly zinc, and Campo Morado has a reputation for being a tough mine, and it is. It's not easy metallurgically. It's got all kinds of issues, but these guys have done a great job of turning that around, and they're actually spending pretty decent cash flow out of that. But they're starting their second. They've started their second mine. They literally just started like 2 weeks ago, putting ore through the mill. Once they get that up to 500 tons a day, they will add a second mill. They should be up to 1,000 tons per day by the end of the year. That one's also VMS, but it's predominantly gold, silver, the gold, silver, and it's a much easier deposit than Campo is. Campo's, I mean, I won't bore people with the details, but it's very fine. It's very fine particle size, which is really tricky for metallurgy. Tahueta, which is the second mine, doesn't have those issues. It's just your garden variety, nice, large particle size VMS deposit. So, and given how good a job those guys did with Campo, I'm pretty comfortable they're not going to screw things up at Tahueta. So that's one where you should see the cash flows, I think, climb very fast over the next 6 months. It's very cheap compared to what the cash flow they should be spinning out. And the fourth company is just the High Gold Mining. I mean, great project.
Oh, yeah.
Million ounces, give or take, very high grade. Darwin Green, who runs, it's a great geo. They hit an obscenely high grade drill hole last year. They're going to try to figure out where that goes because they only really got one hole into it. As a lot of you may know, last year was horrendous for assay labs. The turnaround times are terrible. They've actually done some stuff to speed that up too, but that's another one where that one's just more, it's more of an exploration story, but they do have a million ounces resource there already. Yeah. So it's not like they're, it's not like it's greenfields or anything. And one last one I'll mention, because I know you want to talk about it, is Lion One, which I followed forever. I love Wally. I mean, Wally Barakoff, he's such a character. I love the guy. And he's one of these guys, you look at his track record, he's built up three or four large development level companies and had them taken out. He probably personally accounts for at least $2 or $3 billion in takeovers in the last 20 years. Lion One, they've been working on for a long time. It's always felt like a multi-million ounce project to me, but narrow veins are tricky. Like it takes a lot of drill holes to prove up ounces with a narrow vein.
That's right.
That's just how
that's
it
right.
is.
They might have had
a game changer yesterday, right? I mean,
yeah, we'll have to leave it go with that, Eric. We're out of time, but that's a great one, and I like High Gold as well, both of them, and I think Adelaide Mining is one that I followed. I know that Campo de Morado, they have a lot of gold there, but weren't able to get it out. They were working on that. I guess maybe, I don't know if they're making any progress on that or not, but we do have to leave it go with that. We are out of time, Eric. I'm sorry. We have to talk more sometime soon.
Okay.
All right. I look forward to seeing you in Toronto.
Yeah, let's have dinner on Saturday.
Absolutely. Okay, we'll do it. All right, okay. Take care. All right, folks, we do have to go. That's it for this week. Next week, Alistair McLeod is with me. Quentin Henning will be here to talk about Lion One, actually. We just talked about Lion One, a Suvato project. He'll be here. Until then, goodbye, and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.